you, Diana. I'm really extremely pleased to be here. I've been to a lot of APHA meetings over the years, and this is really my first opportunity to get involved and talk about this issue, so it's really thrilling. I want to thank APHA, particularly George Benjamin, the organization's executive director, Bob Volinger of the National Cancer Institute, chair of the APHA's Alcohol, Tobacco, and Other Drugs section. I think I'll call it ATOD from here in. Is that the right name? For extending this invitation to me and the opportunity to be here with you and share this very, very important time. I'd like also recognize Captain Ann Mahoney of SAMHSA, the Substance Abuse and Mental Health Administration, the incoming ATOD chair. I commend the APHA membership for your individual and collective commitment to creating a healthier nation, and applaud the attendees of this session for recognizing that underage drinking is a really important and critical public health concern. My primary responsibilities, as you know, as Acting Surgeon General, involve being our nation's chief health educator. I'm focused on providing accurate, emerging information on topics relevant and related to the health and wellness of all Americans. As many of you may be aware, I'm still new. I've only been in the position since the beginning of October, as you heard, and just getting up to speed on many of the positions. But I'm really thrilled with the opportunities I have to improve public health and to help individuals and families adopt the practices that are most likely to result in better health across the board. Let me tell you about my top priorities in the Office of the Surgeon General. The first is prevention, what each of us can do to help make ourselves and our families healthier. According to CDC, more than 90 million Americans live with chronic diseases. Chronic disease causes 7 out of 10 deaths every year, and treating people with chronic disease accounts for about 75% of the $1 trillion America spends on healthcare each year. Let me just repeat that, 75% of the $1 trillion. That's a lot of bang for the buck that you're going to get with reducing the toll of chronic disease. Right now, we really have it backwards. Our health system, as many of you know, is focused on treatment instead of prevention, and we really have to place more emphasis on the prevention side. Keeping people healthier longer reduces the cost of care and contributes to the quality of life as well. There are 5 key steps to prevent most chronic disease: tobacco control, good nutrition, physical activity, maintenance of a healthy weight, and regular health screenings. We need more Americans to adopt these steps to a healthier life. Prevention also means stopping drug and alcohol abuse before it starts. I don't have to convince you all who are here about this. Prevention is the best strategy for reducing the consequences, the tragic consequences of substance abuse. The next priority in my office is public health preparedness. This includes readiness related to rapid response to all hazards, including natural hazards, earthquakes, pandemics, and terrorist events. The third priority, which we're especially focused on, is eliminating health disparities, and one aspect of that, as you know, is health literacy, the ability of an individual to access, understand, and actually use the health-related information that's given to them. A key part of our success in reducing health disparities is looking at health literacy to promote disease prevention. Nearly 9 out of 10 Americans lack the skills needed to take care of their own health or to know how to prevent disease. That's really embarrassingly high when you think about it. We know that low health literacy affects health. People with low health literacy are less likely to know how to navigate our health system, understand basic health information, and get the preventive health services that they need. And as health continues to become more complex and health care more complex, the importance of health literacy is only increasing. Many of you know why I'm here today, the real focus of this talk, and it's to focus on an issue that impacts every single one of us. We know that alcohol use by young people is a serious health and public safety issue. Each year, approximately 5,000 young people under the age of 21 die as a result of underage drinking. That's 5,000 young people. That's really amazing. This includes 1,900 deaths from motor vehicle crashes. We read about them in the newspaper almost every day. 1,600 as a result of homicides, 300 from suicides, as well as hundreds of others, such as falls, burns, and drownings that can be associated with use of alcohol. Quite simply, the underage drinking places the future well-being and productivity of our kids at stake. These are our future. These kids are our future, and we have to be doing more about it. So simply put, it's an issue that all of us, that everyone really has a stake in. The goals articulated by your section, alcohol, tobacco, and other drugs, show that APHA is really well aware and focused on this issue. And I'm really, really impressed by the section's goals, as you've stated. Number one, sound research, prevention, and treatment practices. Two, effective communication on these issues to APHA members and to the wider community. And I commend the group for this focus, and really look forward as Surgeon General to hearing more about it and working with you over the next period of time. I know, of course, that the 1,000 or so members of your section are greatly concerned about the health and well-being of our young people. And this level of commitment to the subject of youth drinking is also reflected by the fact that 9 out of the section's 35 sessions and 6 of the 29 poster sessions at this meeting focus on underage drinking, from screening and brief interventions to environmental policy strategies that focus on restricting access to and sale of alcohol by geographic area. We know there isn't one answer to youth alcohol abuse, and the breadth of these posters and presentations really shows that you all understand this extremely well. The Office of the Surgeon General and its partners, like APHA, are working to reduce underage drinking, and they're meant to ensure that our children have the greatest opportunity to succeed. Our goal as health professionals, providers of care, parents, and caring adults is to provide kids with the tools they need to make positive and healthy choices, to help them succeed now and later. This group, I think more than any other, knows the scope of the problem. As early as age 8 or 9, our children are confronted with decisions about alcohol on a regular basis in many settings, including at home and at school. Let's consider now what we know already for sure. Alcohol is the most widely used and abused substance among our nation's youth. A higher percentage of young people between the ages of 12 and 20 use alcohol than use tobacco or other illicit drugs. The 2006 Survey on Drug Use and Health, NSDUH, estimated that the rate of current alcohol use among those aged 12 to 17 was 17% in 2006. In 2006 as well, about 11 million persons aged 12 to 20 reported drinking alcohol in the past month. Among those, 7 million were binge drinkers. 7 million binge drinkers, just think about that, and 2 million were heavy drinkers. These numbers are just extraordinarily large in the way that we think about public health problems. And findings like this are one of the reasons that we released the Surgeon General's call to action to prevent and reduce underage drinking in March of this year. The science is very strong on this. Alcohol use during adolescence is pervasive, and it ramps up dramatically, as we know, between the ages of 12 and 21. Science confirms that the brain continues to develop during those years and through adolescence. This research raises concerns that underage drinking may affect short-term and long-term cognitive functioning, and may even change the way the brain that works in ways that will lead to future dependence on alcohol and other drugs. Research also shows that young people who start drinking before age 15 are 5 times more likely to have alcohol-related problems later in life. This research also provides more reasons than ever for us to be concerned about the effects of underage drinking on our kids. what are the effects of this high level of use on or an abuse on our kids? In people under age 21, alcohol is the leading contributor to death from injuries, the main cause of death, as you all know, in that group. Alcohol has also been shown to play a significant role in risky sexual behavior, including unwanted, unintended, and unprotected sexual activity. It increases the risk of physical and sexual assault. Approximately 600,000 students are unintentionally injured while under the influence of alcohol every year. An estimated 700,000 students are assaulted by other students who've been drinking. Again, these numbers are huge. About 100,000 students are victims of alcohol-related sexual assault or date rape. Really staggering numbers and compelling numbers, and numbers that are based on very firm science. Underage drinking is not, I repeat, is not a harmless rite of passage. The reality is our young people are being harmed by underage drinking. And that's why the Surgeon General's call to action is attempting to change the culture and attitudes towards underage drinking in America. Our call to action articulates the federal commitment to underage drinking issue, but also outlines the need for community and state action all across the country. The goals of the call to action include, one, fostering social changes that contribute to healthy adolescent development, two, engaging parents, schools, communities at all levels of government, all of our social systems that interface with youth and youth themselves in a coordinated national effort to prevent and reduce underage drinking and its consequences. Number three, promoting an understanding, and this understanding is really important, of underage consumption and the context that it falls in human development and maturation that takes into account individual adolescent characteristics as well as environmental, ethnic, cultural, and gender differences. Number four, conducting additional research on alcohol dependence and its relationship to development. Number five, working to improve public health surveillance on underage drinking and its risk factors. And lastly, ensuring that policy on all levels of government and across the country are focused on the national goal of preventing and reducing underage alcohol consumption. I'm confident when we broadly discuss this issue among parents, teachers, community people, community leaders, and young people themselves, the goals of the call to action to reduce and prevent underage drinking will be appreciated, embraced, and will literally save lives. The call to action outlines several activities that we think are particularly promising, efforts directed towards the establishment of parents' safe homes, parent safe homes type conditions that involve pledges not to serve alcohol to youth in that home and to host only alcohol-free parties. Number two, youth involvement with underage drinking law enforcement activities. Number three, enforcement of all existing underage drinking laws and more widespread publicity about these enforcement efforts. Number four, community-based efforts to hold accountable university and campus groups that encourage and engage in underage drinking. Efforts like those supported by your section to reduce easy access to alcohol around college campuses and military bases, including efforts that look at outlet density, low-priced drinks, and alcohol promotions. And last, efforts to reduce drinking in public places. And we think all of these steps are really things that can be done reasonably, have already been shown to work. The federal policy effort to address underage drinking is coordinated by a committee, and in my study of acronyms, this is really one of the best, ICPUD. I don't know if you call it that. It's the Interagency Coordinating Committee on the Prevention of Underage Drinking, and this committee is chaired by the SAMHSA administrator, and I know the agency leadership, because I've sat down with them, has been exceptional on this, and they're really committed. The committee's member agencies support a wide range of programs in a comprehensive response to the challenge of this problem. I want to take a few minutes to highlight some of these federal activities that are coordinated through this committee. Through the Enforcing Underage Drinking Laws, EUDL, the U.S. Department of Justice devotes dollars to enforcement and to holding young people, parents, and communities accountable. And I know we've got at least one DOJ representative here today, and we do think this is a critically important part. The National Highway Traffic Safety Administration within the Department of Transportation partners with SAD, the Students Against Destructive Decisions, to develop numerous program materials to address underage drinking and driving. Currently, SAMHSA, the Substance Abuse and Mental Health Services Administration, has reached out to parents, their children, and educators in many programs. SAMHSA convened more than 1,200 town hall meetings in all 50 states recently. With collaboration of the Ad Council, SAMHSA has developed an underage drinking prevention campaign focused on parents of 9 to 15-year-olds, and I'm sure almost everybody in the room has seen these. Products include 4 television PSAs as well as PSAs for radio, print, and the internet. Reach Out Now is a unique school-based underage drinking prevention initiative designed specifically for use by 5th and 6th grade students, their families, and their teachers. And this is another SAMHSA project. The National Institute on Alcohol Abuse and Alcoholism, and I'll just call them NIAAA, is a component of the National Institutes of Health, as many of you know, and it's been very active as well and an invaluable partner in the call to action and all these activities. The federal effort to prevent youth drinking would not really be where it is without NIAAA's guidance and leadership. The agency is also a co-founder of one of the things that I've heard about in this area that I'm most excited about, and that's the Leadership to Keep Children Alcohol-Free organization. The Leadership is a coalition of governors, spouses, federal agencies, and public and private organizations. It's an initiative to prevent the use of alcohol by children ages 9 to 15. It's the only national effort that focuses on alcohol use in this particular age group, 9 to 15. This group of first spouses has made underage drinking a priority. My predecessor, Rear Admiral Mortsugu, visited a number of states on the invitation of leadership members to promote and bring attention to the call to action, and I intend to continue that activity. I've already met with the organization in my first few weeks in this position, and I look forward to continuing to work with the leadership to continue this critical momentum with the governor's spouses that they've created since the release of our document. The guides to action, and I've got one here, as we know, underage drinking is multidimensional. To really affect a change, we have to approach it from many different levels, and that's why we've created these guides to action for families, communities, and educators. This is the educator one I just held up, but they all look like that. These are plain language guides to help people understand what the call to action says and what it means to that particular group, how it can be interpreted for each of those groups. They empower families, communities, educators with the knowledge and tools in delivering the underage drinking message in a way that's easy to hear, understand, embrace, and I think most importantly, put into action. It shows them that everybody really has a space, has something that they can individually do to help with this. By making this information about the hazards of underage drinking easier to understand and more accessible, it's easier for communities to actually take action. Young people are better positioned and better able to make sound and appropriate choices when the take-home message is clear, and this is something I've seen throughout my public health career. Anyone can, and all of us should send the message, and there's a place for each of us. It's a simple one. Underage drinking is dangerous. Rather than working separately, we need to connect the dots between all these different parts of the public health world from all sectors of society, federal, state, and at really importantly, the local level. In doing so, we need to continually promote the necessity of parental involvement in the lives of our children. This is absolutely critical. And by tackling an issue, a public health issue, law enforcement issue, mental health issue, from a group perspective, rather than an individual perspective, we can have the best possible impact. Underage drinking is everyone's problem, and its solution is everyone's responsibility. Unfortunately, as many of us know, there's a widespread perception that young people, as a matter of routine, drink alcohol no matter what. This is not so. It shouldn't be so. Underage drinking is not a rite of passage. When the American people rejected the use of tobacco and illicit drugs as a culturally acceptable behavior, the use of those substances declined. It didn't decline overnight, but it did decline dramatically, measurably over years. And the culture of acceptance shifted to disapproval. This same cultural change is possible with underage drinking, and this is really where we need to go. Parents' opinion is actually one of the key reasons that people choose not to drink. Parents must talk to their children. Parents must talk with their children, often and early in life, before they even get to the age of making these decisions. Parents must remain involved with their kids' decision-making. They must send our children a clear, unequivocal, consistent message that underage drinking is unhealthy, unsafe, and unacceptable. When parents do this, they won't be popular. I know this. I'm raising three teenagers, and I've been there. However, they will be responsible parents. This is tough love, and as every parent knows, tough love is part of child raising, and it's not just tough on the kids, it's also tough on the parents. It's never too early to talk to kids about alcohol, to give them accurate information about drinking, to answer their questions, even to those they don't ask. They need to hear and appreciate accurate information about alcohol misuse, underage drinking, and the damage that it can do. In talking to their children, parents need to trust them, trust themselves, and trust their message, and just keep repeating it over and over and over. Those of us working to prevent underage drinking are following the evidence where it leads, and it points to the dangers of drinking for our young people. The consequences of underage drinking are real, and they can't be ignored. With that in mind, I ask for your help, the assistance of APHA, and every member of the audience today. Each of you plays a role in your capacity as an advocate for better public health, to foster these changes that are necessary to help prevent and reduce underage drinking. Get involved and urge others that you know to do so, your other parents, your friends. Reach out to your public health counterparts wherever they are, at community health centers, at local clinics, in state and county and other health departments. Engage them as agents of behavioral and attitudinal change. If we keep talking about it, this is where we'll go, but we have to be aggressive. We can connect all the dots. We can create and sustain links among public health stakeholders, our colleagues in the fields of law enforcement, public safety, and public education. There aren't enough of these links being made, and we can all work together to help make them. We can do it. We can do it because we care about the health and we care about the well-being of our nation and our children. This is how we can build a stronger and healthier nation together. Underage drinking diminishes what is otherwise possible for our kids, what we want for them, what they deserve: healthy bodies, healthy minds, and healthy spirits, healthy and safe communities. That's where we need to go. The good news is that as professionals, we care about improving public health. We can make a profound difference. We're the leadership of public health in this country. If we go there, people will follow. Each one of us in this room can be an agent of change. Each one of us can act meaningfully to reduce and prevent underage drinking. In closing, I invite anyone interested in learning more about the Office of the Surgeon General and our activities to visit our website. It's really easy, and you can read more about all of this. The address is www.surgeongeneral.gov. So thank you very much. I'm, again, really pleased to be here, and I think with that, I'll move on to our next event, which is a panel discussion about how all we can work together further on underage drinking. We've got panelists today that are at the table: Steve Wing, who's SAMHSA's Associate Administrator for Alcohol Prevention and Treatment Policy, Trish Powell from the NIAAA Office of Science Policy and Communications, and Sherry Cantillon from the Department of Justice. Thank you very, very much. Keep up the great work in this section and in APHA, and thanks a lot for allowing me to be here.
Thank you again, Rear Admiral, for your great leadership on this issue. Let's have another round of applause as he leaves. For those of you who are standing, there are some seats in the front row if you'd like to take this opportunity to move up. I'd like to introduce our next presenter is Steve Wing, who's the Associate Administrator for Alcohol Policy at SAMHSA, where he coordinates and advises the administrator on alcohol issues. He also chairs that committee that was referenced by the Surgeon General with the very strange acronym of ICPUD. He has worked on alcohol and drug prevention and treatment issues at the local, state, and federal levels for nearly 25 years. Please welcome Steve Wing.
Good morning. You know, I forgot to bring my bio, and I don't coordinate the administrator.
Oh, you don't?
So I got that wrong. The rest of the morning, the rest of the panel, we're going to talk in a little more depth about some of the things that Rear Admiral Galson mentioned, specifically some of the things about what ICPUD's been doing. Trish Powell will talk about some of the NIAAA research, and Sherry Cantillon from the Department of Justice will talk about the UDL program. Before I start with that, though, I'd like to just talk for a minute about some of the Ad Council campaign that the Surgeon General mentioned, and we had it embedded in my slides and a couple of the ads, and we can't make them work. So I'm wondering, how many here have seen these PSAs where there's a young person, David or Lisa or Brandon or Emily, and they say, you know, my name is David, and in 10 years I'll be an alcoholic? And is that a fairly common? I wanted to tell you a little bit about the development of those PSAs because I think it taught us a lot about where we are in this country on the issue. We started working on those several years ago, and in preparation for them, the Ad Council in New York, which is a nonprofit that that works with sort of very well-known ad agencies on public service announcements, the Ad Council, of course, did a literature review, but they also did focus groups with parents of 9 to 15-year-olds, and they found consistently in these focus groups, which were diverse geographically, diverse racially and ethnically and so on, they consistently found that the parents did not believe that their kids were using alcohol. In fact, they thought that we were cooking the books and lying to them. They thought that the statistics that we were telling them were wrong. They did not see alcohol underage drinking prevention as a particularly high priority. They believed that it was inevitable that their children would drink. And when they were asked what sorts of messages would make you change your mind, the one that came to the very top of the list was concerns about my child's future, particularly if there was any negative impact on the brain. And also if my child were to be harmed in other ways. So that's why the ad that you see is structured the way it is. And it was a really fascinating for me watching this process evolve because the Ad Council's in New York and they have very talented people, but it is New York and it's a tough crowd. They all have kids that all the people working on this had teenagers, and so that you could see as the PSAs were being developed, you could see an evolution in how the people working on it thought about the issue as they started seeing some of the science. And I remember in particular one meeting where, by way of background, the way the Ad Council works is that they get a well-known ad agency to do these things pro bono, and the people that did that ad are the Affleck Duck people, if you've seen that ad. And so they come up with two or three concepts, and they have one that they recommend, and they bring it to a panel of people who are the leaders of advertising, of the advertising industry in New York City, who do that as a pro bono basis, on a pro bono basis, and they look at the different concepts, and this is the one that they, the one that you've seen is the one they picked. And at the end, someone from the Ad Council said, "You know, it's, we've been very interested because you're very, very engaged in this." And what the people sitting at the head of the table said, "Well, you know, we all have children this age." So anyway, it was interesting to us, not only what we learned about the, it was sort of a microcosm of everything that we're doing, you know, that the attitudes of parents, how much that needs to change for this to change, and that we can, by presenting the science, raise the awareness of individuals and groups and communities who will then hopefully be spurred to make some changes. So with that story, I'm going to very quickly go through some of the, frankly, bureaucratic things that are going on, and I'm not going to take a lot of time with it because I would much rather listen to Trish Powell and Sherry than me. I think, just to set the stage, you know, alcohol's been around a long time, this show, which I don't need to tell all of you, but I think that has a lot to do with why we see it as a rite of passage. I don't have it on here, but there is a place in one of Plato's dialogues where he talks about the one I was reading was an archaic translation, so it said, all the young men got drunk the night before, as young men are wont to do, and they had to start talking about philosophy late the next morning because they were all hungover. This is not a new problem. I was going to say a lot of this started with the the IOM report, but in fairness, I think I should really say that at the federal level, the UDL program, which started, was it 99 or 98? 98, was probably the first national program looking at underage drinking that sent grants into every state. Now, SAMHSA has had a series of programs, but that was the one that I think probably has the most, had the most and longest visibility. After that, in the Congress asked the Institute of Medicine to take a look at this issue, and they published this important document in 2003. And you can find it here at www.nap.edu. One of the recommendations of the IOM report was that that we should have a strategy to create a national commitment to underage drinking by engaging states, communities, parents, and other essential components. And they talked about the overarching goal of the strategy was to create and sustain a broad societal commitment to reduce underage drinking and to pursue opportunities to reduce the availability of alcohol to underage drinkers, the occasions for underage drinking, and the demand for alcohol among people. Probably a pretty good goal for all. I'm not going to go over the strategy components. They looked at a variety of different areas. You can find it in the executive summary or in the document. One of the things they talked about was a need for federal coordination. In response to the IOM report, the Congress asked the Secretary of HHS to create the ICPUD, and that was actually created in 2004. And then the ICPUD was put in statute by the STOP Act in last fall, which is the sober truth on preventing, I got lost the G off there, underage drinking. And it has, these are the 13 member agencies of the ICPUD. The purpose of the committee, and this comes out of the STOP Act, is to guide policy and program development across the federal government with respect to underage drinking, provided, however, that nothing in this section shall be construed as transferring regulatory or program authority from an agency to the coordinating committee. We didn't get that proofread very well, did we? And it is supported by a group of agency representatives with expertise and responsibilities in the area of alcohol prevention that meets weekly, and that's the group that all of us are involved with. I'll tell you a little bit about what the group has done. Several years ago, we convened a national meeting that had representatives from all states, and we've seen in various states that those groups, they brought teams to Washington, and various states have told us things that those teams are doing that are advancing the issue. We have a new website called, well, it's not new anymore, called StopAlcoholAbuse.gov that brings information from various federal agencies together. I've already talked about the Ad Council campaign. These are the two things that we would have seen had we been able to make them work. We've issued an annual report in 2006 as required by the Congress and as required by the STOP Act. We're working on the second report now. As the Surgeon General mentioned, in 2006, ICPUD supported town hall meetings across the country. There were over 1,200 of them, and we are going to be doing another round of those meetings in the spring. Of course, we all know about the call to action, which was released in March this year. That's been a very important part of pushing the agenda forward. The Surgeon General mentioned that there have been rollouts in a number of states that his predecessor, Admiral Moritsugu, participated in. These are the states where they took place. He also mentioned the leadership to keep children alcohol-free. This shows some of the spouses that are involved in it. It's a very broad coalition of both sitting and emeritus governor's spouses. They've had a very important impact on advancing this issue. Here are just a few pictures from some of these rollouts, and you'll notice that, for instance, in Hawaii, there's the previous Surgeon General with the Lieutenant Governor, who's the official spouse because the governor's unmarried. Here's a rollout in Maine. The woman on the right is the governor's wife there. Here's the rollout in North Carolina with Mrs. Easley, to the governor's spouse. And here they sort of did double duty. They rolled out the call to action and also drew attention to a media literacy curriculum for middle school students. And North Carolina will be doing follow-up work with pediatricians. In New Mexico, there's the Surgeon General, Mrs. Richardson. It was interesting there that they convened a meeting with leading doctors from around the state, held a town hall meeting in the evening, had a reception at the governor's mansion, which has become kind of a characteristic of these, where the Surgeon General gets to meet with the governor's cabinet, the Secretary of Health, the chancellors, the universities, and so on, to talk about the issue. So the point of these rollouts is to try to infuse the issue not only in the press, but at the highest political leadership of the state. Next steps. Well, as the Surgeon General said, we are delighted that he is going to continue with these rollouts, and their office is in the process of planning more of them. As I mentioned, SAMHSA, in collaboration with ICPUD, will again support town hall meetings. Our goal is to increase the number and have somewhere between 1,500 and 2,000 of them across the country. We're working with the Ad Council to broaden the media campaign targeting racial and ethnic minorities, and ICPUD will continue to coordinate underage drinking activities at the federal level. This conclusion really reiterates a lot of what the Surgeon General has already said, so rather than going through it, I'm going to move on and so my colleagues can speak. This is the website I mentioned, and you will find all of the documents that we've been talking about there, plus a lot of other information. So, thank you.